Welcome to the Freedom Formula for Physicians podcast, where it's all about slashing your debt, slashing your taxes, and creating a liberated lifestyle. And now, your host, who has a vast collection of vintage DC and Marvel comic books, and ironically lives in Minnesota, where his favorite NBA team, the LA Lakers, originated, Dave Denniston.
This episode is brought to you by our generous sponsor, Plastic, with a Q. That's P-L-A-S-T-I-Q, Plastic. Big thanks to them for sponsoring the podcast. Hello, my friends. This is Dave Denniston, and welcome back to the latest episode of the Freedom Formula for Physicians podcast, a podcast dedicated to helping physicians like you slash your debt, slash your taxes, and living a liberated lifestyle. And I am excited for our latest guest today. He is a consultant specializing in having that CFO role for a company. And he's in charge of a team that has a proven track record working with private businesses of all kinds of shapes and sizes. And he has a background as a CPA and accountant. So I know he has a lot of good things, business lessons to pass along the way to us. Please help me welcome Brent McClure. Welcome, Brent.
Hey, thanks so much. Thank you for having me.
It's my pleasure. I just love talking numbers and geeking out on this kind of stuff and talking about businesses. So Brent, take us down a journey down memory lane. Tell us more about you and your journey.
Okay, sure. I like to say that I've had a lifetime of business experience. I spent the first 20 years of my life in a family-owned business. I can remember from a very young age, stocking shelves in exchange for a quarter to go play Miss Pac-Man in the back.
Yeah.
So that's when business started for me, and the entrepreneurial journey started for me from a very young age. And then went to college, became a CPA. So I had the next 20 years of my life were as being a CPA. I spent some time in public accounting as well as at a CFO role or chief financial officer role. And once I became a CFO for a mid-sized company, I realized that the CFO role, you know, it covers things like strategy, leadership, presentations, communication with board of directors, and lots of things like that that maybe a small business doesn't have or doesn't have access to. And so I felt like there was an unmet need in that small business category. So that's when I started my little side hustle of virtual CFOing, and it kind of grew from there. And that's where we are today. So I have a small consulting or boutique consulting firm that specializes as virtual or part-time CFO for smaller businesses.
So maybe there's some of us sitting here saying virtual CFO, what the heck does that mean? What is a virtual CFO?
So CFO, like I mentioned, chief financial officer, they help. The CFO normally sits in larger businesses that can actually afford a CFO or needs a CFO full time. And I'm coming into small to mid-sized businesses that maybe don't need a CFO full time, but definitely need someone that they can bounce ideas off of or looking to for strategy or leadership, accounting, finance, working with lenders, things like that, developing a presentation for a loan application, or maybe the board or the owners or insurance companies. And so I'm coming in on a part-time basis, you know, and for a part-time fee, whether that's virtually or in person, and acting as a CFO for a small size business. Does that make sense?
Yeah, I think I'm kind of following you. So if I'm a doctor, I have a private practice, and we have all kinds of issues we deal with, whether it's receivables, payables, maybe we want to get a new piece of equipment, something like that. And you're juggling all these balls as well as practicing in your practice. It sounds like someone like yourself can step in and relieve some of those daily duties that you have to deal with to get the lending that you need, for example, or I guess to follow up on accounts receivables. Is that pretty well describe how this could interact here with us?
Yeah, absolutely. You described it perfectly. So from a physician standpoint, they have enough on their plate from, seeing patients or running their practice, let alone the financial side of the practice and how can we make more money, or how can we save more money, or how can we pay less taxes, as well as accounts receivable, medical billing, payables, lending, equipment, financing, list goes on.
So I'd love to know from you, Brent, because you deal with a lot of different businesses and a lot of different areas that isn't just physician specific. I'd love to know from you, what do you think some of the common traits of wealthy people, because you deal with a lot of entrepreneurs, people that are very successful that obviously can afford to have on a CFO. What would you say are some of the common characteristics of the successful entrepreneurs that you see that are really wealthy?
That's a great question. So the successful entrepreneurs that are really wealthy, some common characteristics I'm seeing in those are they're very, very good at their craft, whatever that craft is, whether it's a service contractor or a doctor or a lawyer, and as well CPAs. They're extremely well-versed and talented in their craft. They also have a very good understanding of money, finances, how to make a business work or how to make a business run successfully for them, which sometimes that comes from having the right CPA, having the right tax attorney, having someone like myself involved to help them through some of these hurdles.
So would you say, like, I often think I want to kind of push back on this a little bit. You know, Michael Gerber in The E-Myth and Tim Ferriss and some of these other people really talk about the point where rather than practicing in your business where you are the physician providing care, for example, that a lot of times you don't want to be that. If you really want to grow wealth and have time freedom, that instead what you want to do is to essentially to have other people providing those services where you're not working in the business, but you're working on the business.
You're working on the business, exactly.
So what would you say, because what you just referred to was more being the practitioner, right? So what would you say in terms of feedback on that? You know, that,
yeah, sure.
That general thought, is that right? Is that wrong from your perspective? What would you say?
Yeah, no, that's you're absolutely correct. And in the difference between working in your business and on your business, but even those that I see working on their business rather than in their business, they understand the craft to a certain degree that, they know what's going on inside their business. Does that make sense? Not that they're actually the ones working, but they understand it in such a way that they can manage or they can lead a team that are actually, like you mentioned, someone else doing the actual work. So they can then work on the business and look at different areas like strategy or expansion, you know, how to take their business to the next level and the next level after that, and rinse and repeat. And that is where, you know, solid wealth comes from. There are only so many hours in the day. And if we all have 24 hours, it's how we use those 24 hours, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so if you are the practitioner, then you're billing however many of your 24 hours, and that's capped. You're limited by that. But if, like you said, you're working on your business, you know your business well enough that you can take a step back and have others involved in you know, doing the actual work, then absolutely.
So can you tell me about a time you've seen someone make that transition?
I can. I'm working with a business now that is sort of inherited from, I say inherited, they purchased from their parents who started the business, so second generation business. And they grew up working in the business, and that's a lot of what they knew is working inside this business. We had lots of conversations. I know this individual pretty well about taking a step back and getting involved more with sales, management, leadership, expansion opportunities, and things such as that, rather than just working, you know, directly in the business for the customers. And a light bulb went off one day where he finally realized, hey, I'm killing myself trying to work to make more money, when what I need to do is take a step back and hire some individuals to come in and do this work for me. And so that's exactly what happened is he got in front of some potential employees. There was some promotion from within. He brought on new employees to take over some of the work that he had been accustomed to doing, which cost a little bit of money up front, but long term, even not even that long, within a year, he had recouped the money of hiring additional people to fill his role and was on the road to expansion because he could take his sights off the detailed work and focus more on long term, like sort of get out of the ditch and focus on what's going on around you.
And how long do you think this process took?
It took a few months to identify some replacements, and then so maybe 3 months in doing that to making sure you had the right fit there, and then another 7-8 months before you started recouping that expense.
So what was that like for your friend during this time period? Was he stressing out? Was it a hard time period? You know, tell us more about the grind of this transition.
Yeah. So at first he was stressing out because it was relieving control, right? So you're sort of taking your hands off the reins, so to speak. But once things started to work the way they should have, then his stress level certainly went down dramatically after actually handing the role over and seeing that other people, you know, hey, other people can do this job as well as I can, and it's okay to let other people do it. Now let's get busy focusing on, you know, other areas of the business.
All right, sweet deal. And now let's take a moment for a quick commercial break. My friends, when it comes to running your medical practice, you are the boss. And it's tough running those day-to-day operations and making sure there's enough money to pay the bills. And that's why Plastiq can help you with your business and cash flow, making everything run smoothly. And that's because Plastiq, that's Plastiq with a Q, lets you pay virtually any business expense with a credit card, from suppliers to contractors to your commercial lease. And you're still earning cash back. You're earning points, you're earning rewards every time you use Plastiq. Go to plastiq.com/physicians today. And when you sign up and make your first payment up to $1,000, Plastiq will waive the transaction fee. That's PLASTIQ. Again, my friends, PLASTIQ, Plastiq with a Q, .com/physicians. And now, back to the show. So we've gone through that and kind of what makes wealthy people successful, and particularly in the entrepreneurial space. What about like cash flow? This is something you deal with on a regular basis. And I want to try to apply this to physicians as much as we can. So can you think of, Brent, you know, 3 or 4 or 5 common things where you see doctors and those that run their own practice could improve their cash flow?
Sure. Great question. 3 or 4 things where doctors and those that run their own practice could improve their cash flow. I think the number one thing that that I see a lot of businesses doing that that makes sense is, you mentioned receivables and payables earlier, is matching your receivables and payables. I've seen a few service providers, or like doctors, lawyers, CPAs, that pay their bills very quickly, but then it takes a long time for them to collect their bills. And so I call that mismanaging cash. If you can pay your payables more in line with your receivables, you know, if you're not getting your receivables in for 30 days or 60 days, then if you can, certainly don't pay your payables until 30 days or 60 days, right? So you're matching your cash. And as long as the music keeps going, that maybe it doesn't feel like that matters. But if you have a slump or a bump in business, then you'll find yourself short on cash.
Well, and I suppose that one of the things that everyone tends to think about is, you get a bill, you have to pay it, right? And right. What you're saying is that's not necessarily the case, that if it's taking you 60 days to get reimbursements from Medicare, maybe you should just hold on to that bill. What about penalties? You know, because that could be a concern. You get hit with a penalty if you don't pay a bill on time. How does that play into this?
Well, that's true. I mean, you have to do it within reason. So if you're getting penalized for not paying a bill, then, you know, certainly that bill probably needs to be paid. But if you can stretch them out to 30 days or 60 days, then by all means, please stretch them out. But, you know, a lot of bills are like net 30 days or payments due within 30 days. Then push the 30 days, push that boundary. Even if you have a reminder, like I have a lot of reminders on when my 30 days, you know, is coming due, so that I'm not late on bills, but I've stretched them out as long as I possibly can.
All right, great. Well, that was a great suggestion. Any other ones related to cash flow?
So one that I find a good bit with individual or businesses that have major equipment. So I'm thinking like physicians, maybe they have major equipment that they've purchased in their offices. There's a lease back opportunity. So they can sell the equipment and then lease it back, or sell the equipment and get new equipment on a lease rather than a capital outlay. And by capital outlay, I mean buying the equipment up front. So oftentimes leasing equipment provides a much smoother cash flow than actually spending the money up front to purchase equipment.
So you said you'd buy a piece of equipment, then you would sell it. Who are you selling it to?
If you already own a newer piece of equipment, you could sell it to, there are several companies in the marketplace that do the sale lease backs and allow you to sell the equipment back to them. And then they lease it back to you. They turn around and lease it back to you. So at the end of the day, you've paid more money out, but if you're having cash flow problems, this is a lot easier on your cash flow. Or if you want to do an expansion and you can sell a piece of equipment, maybe it's $100,000 piece of equipment and you can sell it, then there's $100,000 coming into your pocket in exchange for maybe $1,000 a month in a rental payment or a lease payment. Does that make sense?
Sure. I'm following you. And that this might be out of your bailiwick a little bit, but I guess I think about that. And the first thing that came to my mind was like a car, right? You know, you get a brand new car, you drive it off the lot. We know that you lose $5,000 or $6,000 or $10,000 the second you drive it off the lot. Sure. And I would tend to think equipment is much the same. I don't know that for a fact, but I would have to imagine that in the real world, it depreciates far quicker than like a 30-year straight line or whatever you would normally amortize a piece of equipment for.
Right.
So couldn't that actually hurt you worse in a sense that you took a big hit on selling it back? Or am I just wrong that maybe a lot of pieces of equipment don't depreciate like a car when you drive it off the lot?
Yeah, it depends on the piece of equipment, actually. You know, some do depreciate pretty quickly when you, in the example, drive it off the lot. Some, on the other hand, don't. And I'm not suggesting that you buy a piece of equipment and immediately turn around and sell it. I mean, if you have a piece of equipment that's maybe 3, 4, 5 years old, so you have some use out of it, but there's definitely use left on it that you could sell and turn that into a leased piece of equipment if you needed cash flow.
All right. So this is just more in an emergency kind of mode, if you will, or if things are starting to feel tight of ways, ways to kind of make it through. Gotcha.
Right.
Okay, great. And any thoughts on just running a business in general, having ran quite a few, being in the financials of quite a few, you know, what are 2 or 3 tricks, tips, hints that you could give to us?
Yeah, sure. I'm going to say it's difficult to be all things to all people. I see a lot of small business owners that try to do a little bit of everything. And sometimes certainly that is warranted. You have to wear many hats as a small business owner. And I'm not saying take all the hats off. I'm just saying that it's difficult to do everything when possibly you could outsource or delegate a task. Like maybe it's bookkeeping and you're not the greatest at books, but you're a fantastic surgeon who is running your own practice. Hire a bookkeeper or outsource your bookkeeping function to an expert that can take that off the plate, so you can then focus on those skills and areas where you excel the most. So double down on your strengths and outsource, delegate, reassign those areas where you may not be as strong. I find to be helpful with small business owners.
Perfect. Perfect.
Yeah.
Any time hacking things you might pass on to us, Brent?
So automate is what I say when I get this question. I like, so I have scheduling, emails, appointments, you know, just like physicians do, CPAs do, lawyers do, professional service folks do. I try to use Microsoft tools as well as Google tools to automate those as much as possible, so I'm not missing anything. I also recently turned off my notifications on email on my phone because I found myself just glued to my phone all the time because I get a lot of emails, right? And so it was always dinging and I was always looking, which broke my train of thought. And it took me a while to get back into my train of thought. On that standpoint, also one of my favorite elements of, I believe is David Allen's getting things done, is the 2-minute rule. So if it's going to take you less than 2 minutes, go ahead and do it. Mm-hmm. If not, then put it off. If it's going to take longer than 2 minutes, put it off until a later time. And that keeps me pretty efficient throughout the day.
Nice. Perfect. And finally, one of the questions that I love to ask, Brent, is let's say you're talking to a physician and they've never gotten any business training. You know, words like account payables and account receivables, their eyes start glazing over. What's the most important lesson that you would like to pass on to us, considering the fact that many of us haven't had that financial training back in medical school?
Sure. So I would say spend time with a tax planner, spend time with an investment guru, take the time to build relationships in those two areas, I think are pretty important for physicians. You want your income and investments to be working for you, not against you. And of course, you want to pay the least amount of taxes possible. And I know that you could figure this out on your own by reading, you know, the thousands and thousands of books that are out there on these very topics. Or you could talk to a specialist that can help you, you know, become light years ahead rather than trying to dig into this yourself. So I would suggest become friends with a tax guy and an investments guy or girl, and spend a good bit of time with them so that your money can work for you.
Love it. Perfect. Any closing thoughts, Brent?
I just want to say thank you so much for having me on today.
Oh, you're so welcome. And where can we find you? People want to find out more about you, see if you might be a good fit for their practice. Where can they find you?
Okay, awesome. So my website's probably the best place. That's at brentmcclure.com. I'm Brent at brentmcclure.com if you want to hit me up directly on social media at LBMCPA.
All right, there you go, my friends. And that wraps it up. Another episode of the Freedom Formula for Physicians podcast. Make sure to check out Brent's website, brentmcclure.com, which we should have here in the show notes. Have any questions, make sure to send me an email, dave@drfreedompodcast.com. We'd love to hear from you, hear what you think is going great for you, questions you may have about taxes, and maybe we can bring on Brent or another person to try and answer those kinds of tax questions that are burning right now on your brain, or cash flow questions, or how to start your own practice, those kinds of things. Make sure to read and review the podcast. We'd love to hear from you. And remember, my friends, remember to slash your debt, slash your taxes, and live a liberated lifestyle. All right, my friends. Well, that wraps up the episode for today. Hope you picked up some great nuggets in our episode. And I want to make sure just to give a huge shout out to our sponsor, Plastic. Plastic with a Q. Make sure to check them out so they can help make your practice get to the next level, to keep your business running smoothly. Check them out at plastiq.com/physicians. Again, visit them right now, Plastic, plastiq.com/physicians.